Welcome to Nexus 818 Podcast, a reflective platform for connecting past successes with future progress in the African American community. I'm your host, Dr. JC. This episode series of Nexus 818 Podcast focuses on the 6888 Central Postal Directory Battalion, the only all-female African American battalion to serve in the European Theater of Operations during World War II. If you're tuning into the podcast for the very first time, I encourage you to check out the inaugural episode from September the 7th of 2022 to learn about the background of the 6888 Battalion. I am pleased to welcome to episode 26, the descendant of Vashti Murphy Matthews, who served in the 6888.
My guest tonight is retired Lieutenant Colonel Roger Matthews, son of Vashti Murphy Matthews. Welcome, Roger.
Thanks, Doc. Glad to join you this evening.
I'd like to begin with a few interesting, very interesting facts. First, your grandfather, Dr. Carl Murphy, was the publisher of the Baltimore-based Afro newspaper, which was founded by your great-grandfather.
Correct.
Second, your grandmother, Lula Vashti Turley Murphy, was a founding member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated. Third, your mom Vashti wrote articles for the Afro while serving in the 6888 Battalion. And fourth, about you, you're one of the very few government employees who has worked for a city, a county, a state, a federal agency, and the military. That's a lot. So let's start by talking about your mom, Vashti. So she was born in Baltimore, Maryland in 1921.
Yes.
And how old was she when she enlisted?
Well, she enlisted in 42, so she was 21.
Okay. So what was she doing at the time of enlistment?
Like the rest of the family, she was doing various jobs at the Afro-American newspaper. Back in those days, the Afro was not only in Baltimore and Washington, but it was also in Philadelphia, North and South Carolina, and Richmond. So it was a big operation, and she did many things: engraving, working in a newspaper is called the morgue. That's like the library of the paper where all the archives are kept. So she worked there also, but all over the place. You know, all of us were required to learn all the different aspects of the business, and my mother, of course, was no exception.
That's the family tradition, eh?
Yes.
What did she tell you about why she decided to enlist?
She didn't, which is interesting in and of itself. And I'm one of five children, and I've talked to my siblings. She never talked about it. We knew she served. We knew she went to Europe. But she never really discussed what her motivation was to enlist. Other than, you know, what a lot of people did during that time for patriotism, because my father also served in World War II. As a matter of fact, that's how they met at Fort McHenry in Baltimore. But she never talked about it. So I don't have specifics on what motivated her other than patriotism to enlist. So your guess is as good as mine.
Okay. It was pretty courageous for a young woman, certainly African-American, to join the Army in the 40s during wartime. Do you have any sense of what made her so special? Because not everybody would have made that decision.
Well, I will tell you, my mother was a very determined woman. Not too many people could tell her no about anything. And we saw that growing up.
That sounds like 855 very determined women.
Absolutely. I mean, every one of them had their own nuances, but they were all rather determined women. But the reason I say that she had such tenacity is because my youngest brother had special needs when he was born in the 50s. So you can imagine what it was like to have a child with special needs in those days. And they tried to institutionalize him, and she wasn't having it. And she advocated for him to make sure that he was got all the treatments and that he needed, and he's doing just fine. I mean, he's 60 some years old now, but he's you know, went to college and the whole shoot match. And that is a function of my mother's tenacity to make sure that he was taken care of.
Right,
And I watched her do, I watched her do that as we were all growing up.
because not everybody is fortunate to have a parent who's as resourceful as your mother was and making sure that, and forceful.
Yes.
And so many people would just give up because the system is not designed to make things work a lot of
Well,
time.
and what she did, to be fair to her, what she did is find the places for him to go and get the treatments that he needed and get the state and the federal government to help pay for it.
Right. So I'm interested in any stories that she may have shared with you about her time in the service, any adventures, scary or funny memories, anything, or she didn't
She
really talk about it.
didn't talk about it, and I talked to my older sister about it because she's 5 years older than me, and you know, maybe she knew something I did, and she said no, she never talked about it. The only indication that we got is when we were growing up, when she would wake us up in the morning, she would sing that Irving Berlin song, "You Gotta Get Up in the Morning, You Gotta Get
Right.
Up, You Gotta Get Up." She would sing that to us to wake us all up in the morning. That was the only indication that we had of anything dealing with the military and her career in the military. She never talked about it to us.
So I'd like to hear more about what she did when she completed her military service, her education, career, community activism. And I think we may
Well,
have
she started having kids.
Oh, wait a minute, let me ask, she went to Cortez Peters Business School. Did she go over that before in the service or after?
Before.
Okay, because my mother was there also before she went to service. And they wouldn't be surprised if they hadn't met each other before they actually went to 6AA. And then your mother went to Howard before or after?
Before.
Okay.
It's my understanding, yeah, she went before, but she didn't finish. I think she only went a year. And we were trying to find some documentation on that, but through word of mouth, we've been able to determine that she went about a year. That's something else she never talked about.
Okay. So did she come back and finish college?
No.
Okay.
She came back, got out of the Army in 40. Well, she was already married.
Okay.
Because my mother got married in 42, in December of 42. And so when got out of the Army in 45, and then my oldest brother was born in 46.
Okay.
And so she was part-time employee at the Afro and the rest of the time, you know, raising five of us.
That's more than a full-time job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was she able to take advantage of GI Bill?
You know, that I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know. I don't know if she used the GI Bill. I did.
Absolutely.
But I don't know if she did or not.
Do you recall any lessons that she learned through her service that she passed on to the family? Any values, traditions other than the Berlin song, "Got to Get Up in the Morning"?
Well, the biggest thing for me was as I was coming through school, and once I graduated high school and was headed off to Morgan State, because of her experience in the military, and remember, I graduated from college in 70, high school in 70, and graduated from college in 74. Vietnam was going on. And I do recall on several occasions her saying to me, because the draft was still active then, and she said to me, "If you're going in, you're going in as an officer." And that had to be a reflection of her experience in the 6AA. You know, if you got to go, this is what I'm going to insist on. And I'll never forget when I came home from the registration at Morgan. I had to produce the documents of my schedule that showed that I was enrolled in military science or ROTC. She was not going to take my word for it.
Oh, parents, that's something else. So let's segue and talk about your family and you and your family. So as you indicated, you attended Morgan State and had a 25-year career in the U.S. Army. And you come from a very distinguished Baltimore family. So first, please share some information about your family legacy with the Afro newspaper and with Delta Sigma Theta Sorority.
Well, with the Afro, I mean, my mother is one of five daughters of Carl Murphy, all of whom at some point worked at the Afro, some more than others. My mother is a twin, and so her twin worked at the Afro very early, but then married someone from Buffalo, New York, and moved to Buffalo, New York. So she didn't work at the Afro after that, but everybody else did. My aunts were either in charge of editorial. I had one aunt that was in charge of all of the social events that were, that were happening in Baltimore and Washington. One other aunt eventually became the chairman and publisher of the paper for several years. And her daughter is currently the publisher and chairman of the board for the paper. All of us had to go work at the Afro. There were 17 grandchildren of that, of my generation. We all at some point worked at the Afro.
What about the
All,
breakdance? Yes.
great. There we have the not president, the vice president of what is he, vice president? Vice President of Circulation, and he does all kinds of things there. He's of that generation. So that generation is there now, and we're already looking at succession planning for the next generation to run the paper, to ensure that we have family members involved. So there's family members all over the place. It was what's interesting is people always ask me, well, where did you start? What did you do first when you went had to go to the Afro? My first job at the Afro, believe it or not, was on the switchboard. And then you worked your way with switchboard, worked your way up through, going where the printing press was and how all that worked and circulation. My brother and sister both worked in the sales department, selling the ads and all of that kind of business. And advertising. And then eventually everybody tried to work their way up to editorial. I ended up editing the magazine section for all the years I was at Morgan. So I mean you had to learn all of the different pieces of the business. And I don't want to say it, but it was required, even though it was required, but we didn't notice it. It was expected. You
Expecting,
just
yeah.
it is expected. You just did it. And I learned so much. I got to meet so many people, so many great people at the paper. And when you get to editorial and you get to go out and do story, write stories about people and do and add, all over the place, you get to meet a lot of people. I got to interview Bill Cosby. I got to interview Ray Charles. That was very interesting as a young guy in college and talking to people like that. So, I mean, it was very exciting. It was very exciting. And then you get to see the result. When the paper comes out and you see your byline there for the work that you've done. So you get an immediate result, which really made it interesting.
Well, it's an amazing family legacy. And yes, I have a subscribe to the Afro, and I recommend to my audience that they do the same. So your great grandmother was one of the founding members of Delta Sigma Theta sorority.
Yes. And since being male, I was not privy to a lot of those conversations. But my daughter is a Delta, so it makes it easy. But that was very very proud for us to know that she was involved in that. Unfortunately, she passed in 1960, and I was born in 53. So I did know her. I remember talking to her on many occasions when. Because what happened is with the five sisters or the four of us, with the one in Buffalo, but the four sisters in the family as we were growing up, we all went to their house, to grandmother and grandfather's house for, Thanksgiving,
Right.
Christmas, Easter, and she would be there and she drove the train. I mean, my grandfather ran the paper, but she ran the household. And that was painfully obvious to all of us.
Listen, being involved with all this, with the that many women in the sorority will teach you how to run the house.
Absolutely. And
So.
she was very masterful of it because she did it in such a way that you didn't really feel like she was bossing you around, but she was bossing you around.
Right. Again, it's about expectations. So tell us about your educational background and military service and post-military career.
Well, I'd always wanted to fly. One of the things I wanted to do when I was very, very small was fly to see planes flying around. And I was able to get my private pilot's license while I was still at Morgan. They had a program as a part of the ROTC to get your pilot's license while you were at Morgan. So I was able to do that.
Do they still have that program, you know?
In the ROTC? No. No, I think they stopped it like 4 or 5 years after I left.
Okay.
I don't think they do that anymore, but they did when I was there. And so I got my private pilot's license, and the Army didn't have an aviation branch in those days, but the Transportation Corps was the proponent for aviation for all of the U.S. Army. So, and Morgan had one of the best ROTC departments in the country. I mean, the training I had to go to after I left Morgan mostly was a repeat because of what I had done at Morgan. So when the Army went to flight school, which was a year. Now, the interesting tidbit when you talk about African-Americans, the Vietnam War was winding down at that time in 74 when I went to flight school. And so any excuse to kick you out, because they didn't need as many pilots then. They needed pilots, new pilots, but not as many. So they were looking for reasons to kick you out. There were 6 blacks in my class. And when we got there and we went to get our equipment, there was a black gentleman behind the counter that was issuing our helmets and flight suits and all of our equipment. And he looked at us and said, "There's 6 of you." We said, "Yeah." So he said, "Never been that many in a flight school before." He said, "5 of you won't make it." And the 6 of us got together right then and there and decided we were going to study together and help each other and get all 6 of us through that 1 year class of flight school. And all 6 of us graduated.
All right. Congratulations.
So we're all pretty proud. We're all pretty proud of that. Yeah. So the Army sent me to flight school. Then I went to test pilot school right after that. So I was a test pilot and then went to Fort Bragg for 3 years and then and flew helicopters. Went to the advanced course. What's interesting is the Army typically will say to you, "We'll send you to this school, but if we send you to this school, you're going to owe us another year."
Right.
You know, so I went to flight school, so I owed them 2 years. So then I went to test pilot school, then I owed them another year. Then I went and got transitioned to the Chinook helicopters, which is a big, much larger aircraft, and I owed them another year. And I went to test pilot school and owed them another year. I mean, it just kind of kept...
That's why you ended up in there for 25 years.
Pretty much. And they kept promoting me. And so, you know, life was good. And, you know, ended up doing almost 25 years. But I was stationed all over the place. In the States, I was stationed in North Carolina, Alabama, Virginia, Colorado, Ohio, and Kansas twice. And then did a year in Korea, a year in Egypt, a year in Israel, 3 years in the Netherlands, and a year in Honduras. So, I mean, all over the place and learned a lot of stuff, met a lot of people, and only got shot at a couple times.
Only a couple times. Well, and then post-military service, you've been very involved in.
But then when I left the Army, I retired from the Army, I went to work for the state of Kansas in their central human resources office. And I was asked to stand up a brand new organization called Workforce Planning and Management. That's an organization that does statistical analysis of all of your workforce, ensuring, you know, working on performance management and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I did that for 3 years. It took a year to get it up and running, and then did that for 3 years. And then it was so successful, I had to start flying around the country to other central state HR offices to do demonstrations or presentations on what we were doing in Kansas. Hmm. That's how successful it was. And then I got recruited because of that to go to Johnson County, Kansas, which is where I am today. But I had applied for a job at the federal government at the same time I went to Johnson County when they recruited me. So when I went to Johnson County, I told them, I said, "Listen, I've got this federal job I'm applying for, and if I get it, I'm out of here." They said, "Just give us as much time as you can." So I ended up staying there about 10 months, and then I went to become an associate deputy administrator in the U.S. Department of Agriculture and stayed there for 15 years until I retired for good.
I retired to the golf course, I believe. Is that correct? You retired to the golf course?
Spend a lot of time now with the grandchildren and on the golf course.
Sounds like a winner. One day I'll figure out how to really retire. Won't be anytime soon, I suspect. So I'm interested, how many members of your family served in the military? I understand your father, Robert W. Matthews III, was in the U.S. Coast Guard, and then your brother, Robert Murphy Matthews Sr., was a commissioned officer in the Army. But do you have
Yes,
other?
he was. He went through ROTC at Morgan also,
Okay.
and graduated. He graduated in 1970. And he did 2 years and got out and did many other things. So he didn't stay like I did. But no. So in my family, it's just my mother and father and my older brother and me. Now my oldest sister was a Department of the Army civilian.
Okay.
And so she ran several of the civilian personnel offices for the Army, in mostly in Germany and in Washington, D.C. She ran the central personnel office for the Army in the capital region in Washington, D.C. for many years.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about
My cho
influence.
my children went to, my
Okay.
children went no part. My children are both Army brats, so they don't want any parts of it.
That's a legacy they're not going to continue, right? So let's talk a little bit about influence and legacy. I'm wondering how your mom's experiences in the 6888 influenced and shaped your life and decisions. Do you have any sense of that?
Well, besides making sure that I went in as an officer and didn't enlist in the Army, which I wasn't sure. I didn't understand it at the time until I went in and said, okay, now I kind of get where she was going. But her demeanor and the way she carried herself, I am convinced the 6888 had something. I mean, she was already had tenacity like all the ladies did. But that 6888, that military mentality, she had that. I mean, five children scattered over as many years as we were. And dealing with all that, and plus dealing with my youngest brother, the 6888 had to have a monumental influence on her. It doesn't surprise me that she got out after the unit was disbanded, because she was already married, and she'd been married by that point 3 years.
Right.
So that didn't surprise me. And then she came back to Baltimore.
So your dad was in the service at the same time.
Yes.
So he was stationed stateside and she was went to Europe.
Well, he was stationed at Fort McHenry, and he was also went to South Pacific during World War II.
Okay, there were two different sides of
So he was in the
the
South Pacific. He was in the South Pacific, and she's in Europe.
world. How old was your mom when she passed?
61.
61.
We lost her in 1980. We lost her in 1981 to MS.
Okay. Is she buried in a veteran cemetery or a family cemetery?
No, she wanted her ashes scattered over Morgan Park,
Okay.
where the family house was. So
Okay.
there is no cemetery plot. But what we did do, the five of us, is there is a stained glass window at the church that we all grew up in, that all of the Murphy family grew up in. There's a stained glass window with her name and my brother's name on it from the children.
And what church
So
is that?
say that
Yeah.
again.
I said, what church is that?
St. James Episcopal Church in Baltimore.
Okay. All right. So I would love to hear about the Leavenworth Monument honoring the 6888. I understand that you and your family were in attendance at the dedication.
What a fantastic ceremony that Fort Leavenworth put on for that. I thought it was really well done. I was really proud to be there. It was important enough to me and to us that not only was I there, and my sister flew in from Virginia, but my daughter was there. My daughter was there. My son was there. Their spouses were there, and their children were there to witness that. And I just think that they did such a fantastic job with the monument. And have you seen it? Have you been there?
I have not been there yet. Well, we're waiting yet
Where
because
they put it and where it sits, it is in a prominent position, a small lake in Buffalo Soldiers Park. So it is in a very prominent position. It was really well done, and the ceremony was just fabulous. And several of the 6888 members were there. I think six or seven of them were there.
right. Right.
at the ceremony. And so it was really great to meet them and talk to them and hear some of their experiences and get the get you know information on what was going on and what they did firsthand. Because
Right.
my mother passed so early that and didn't talk about it, so it was really interesting for me to listen to them and get information from them firsthand.
Yeah, my mother talked a lot about her time in the service. I've not, other than my own mother, of course, I've not had an opportunity to meet any of the others. My sister went down to Alabama and met with Romaine Davis a couple months back. She flew down just to do that. So maybe I'll catch up with some of them soon while they're still with us. It was a significant honor for your mom to receive the Congressional Gold Medal. What was your reaction and the reaction of your family when that when you found out?
About time. We couldn't be more proud. I flew in to DC to be there when the Congress was voting on it. My sister asked me to come in and to be there with her. And so we were over in the Congress the day that the vote was taking place.
So, were you there for the signing when Nancy Pelosi signed?
No, my sister was there
Okay.
because that was a week later. And
Okay.
I wasn't able to turn around and come back to DC that fast, but my older sister was there with Speaker Pelosi. But I mean, we couldn't be more proud that when you hear who has the Congressional Gold Medal and who doesn't,
Right.
and the fact that the 6888 was awarded that medal, and all of the people that worked very hard to make that happen. I mean, after all these years. We couldn't be more proud. The entire family, the entire Murphy family, not just the Matthews family, the entire Murphy family is so proud of that, and wish it had happened a lot sooner. But you know, better late than never.
It's kind of a sidebar question. The name Vashti, I know that that seems to be a multi-generational name in your family.
Yes. Well, we have several. Well, because my grandmother's name's obviously Vashti. But my mother is one is a twin, like I said. So she's named Vashti, and her twin sister is Carlita.
Okay.
Because my grandfather's name is Carl.
Right.
And then so we have at least two more Vashtis so far in
So
the
what's the genesis of the name?
It, you know, I don't know all the details about it, but it does come out of the Bible,
Okay.
and everybody calls it. The pronunciation is always different. You know, we get a little bit of everything, but my mother was always Vashti. I've heard Vashti and you know other things, but it's
Okay, so I got it
Vashti.
correct. Thanks, great.
Yes.
So please share any reflections on what your mother's life and legacy mean to you and your family.
Well, as I stated, watching what she was doing for my youngest brother to ensure that he was taken care of, and then putting that on top of what we're learning about what she did with other ladies in the 6888, I mean, the tenacity, the drive, the making sure the right thing happens, for him to be taken care of. I just marvel at her ability to be able to make that happen, especially we're talking in the 1960s, 1950s and 60s for a black family to be
Right.
able to do that and take care of him and the result because and he's been able to lead a full life and you know and that is a direct testament to her ability to make that happen and I just can't get over. I can't totally understand all of the things that she had to do that, but I know it was very arduous because it's just.
Absolutely, because there was so much more discrimination against people with disabilities and so few resources available back in those days.
That was the key. The lack of resources, particularly in the black community, to do that, to make that happen. So I mean, at one point he went to school up in upstate New York. They sent him up there to help with his situation, and then all the other things that he did. So until finally, he went to Towson State. He didn't go to Morgan like the rest of us. He went to Towson, But he graduated in 4 years, so and been living on his own and doing just fine.
That's amazing. Parents like yours were a blessing, indeed a blessing. I have one final question. So what lessons from your mom's life story can you share to inspire young African Americans to embrace fear as opportunity in order to shatter glass ceilings and be their best selves?
I'm going to use that word again, tenacity. You need to, you got to stay the course. You got to, you can't take, I don't want to say don't take no for an answer, because sometimes no is the right answer, but you need to know that no is the right answer. You got to stay strong. As all the adults in the family, you always say, you got to stay strong. I can hear my mother and all of my aunts saying that in the back of my head. You got to be strong, know what you're talking about, do your research, because that's how she was able to pull that off for my younger brother. Do your research and stay strong and stay the course, and that's what she did. And my daughter has even though my daughter never got to meet her grandmother, so she passed away before she was born, but she's read everything about it, and she has a lot of the same qualities that my mother had.
I think that my daughter did get to meet my mother, because my mother was 91 when she passed. But I think my daughter's developed a much greater, having gone to Europe now and seen the path, my daughter's developed a whole new appreciation. Because young folks think of their grandparents as just grandparents, and grandparents who are always trying to tell them what to do or what not to do. And I think that as my daughter has gone through some of my mama's memorabilia, and then going on this trip, on the tour that we just embarked on, she has now seen her as something other than a grandmother, as a young, vibrant individual who took a lot of risk at that time, as did your mom, to go into a war zone. And so it's been a great reveal for her, and that's good, because that's what we want to do, is make sure that the legacy is not lost, that we pass these things on to the next generation with a full understanding and appreciation as best they can.
Well,
So
I am so glad that I was able to take that trip, because that really brought it home for me, the different locations, where they were and what they did. And then if you back it up to the beginning, before when they were going over, I mean, they're in the North Atlantic with U-boats and all that. I watched the war. I grew up watching war pictures on television, and you see submarines, blowing ships out of the water and all of that. And they're on ships in the North Atlantic during wartime, when the Germans were still not defeated yet.
right.
And so that took a lot of gumption for them to be able to do that.
So did your mother go on the first ship or the second ship? She
I don't
on
know.
okay.
I don't know, but from everything I'm reading, I think she was on the one that had the most people. I think, is that the first one?
That's the Ile-de-France, the one that went over
Yeah, I
in
think that
February.
our understanding, when I was talking to my sister, she was on the first.
Okay. Right. So I don't know whether you know this, but there's already some discussion about a 2025 legacy tour.
Going back over.
But this would be called the 6AAA musical tour, because the musical that Led Underwood is working on will probably, given that we've got the actor strike going on right now and writer strike, that won't be ready to go until probably early 2025. And the thought is to actually kick it off in Europe, to do Glasgow, Birmingham, and Paris, and so that the tour folks on the tour would follow the cast.
Oh,
So it'd be
that
kind
would
of
be interesting.
a
Well, I
different.
know they're working on it because they mentioned the Afro-American so prominently in the story. They sent my cousin, who's the current publisher and chairman of the paper, and me, they sent us the opening song,
Right.
so we could hear right now what the proposed opening song, and it's fantastic. I've had to listen to it.
We heard that in last June, didn't we? When we were at Arlington,
But they've made some changes. So okay. they're still you know, working through to get to the final piece of it. But they sent us another one last month, which was interesting. And now, of course, we're waiting for the hopefully this writer's strike ends sometime in the next year or so we can get the movie out.
Yeah, the latest word I heard was Tyler Perry's movie is likely to come out in probably early 2024 as opposed to late 2023. So, but we'll keep our fingers crossed. Whenever it comes out, it's going to be good. And so this is that's going to be an amazing way to tell the story and get it out to more people. So,
well, I would recommend to any other family members of 6888, of 6888 ladies, if there is another tour, it is well worth it to go over there. Not only to go see where they were stationed and what they did, but the whole World War II experience. I mean, having as a part of the tour going to Normandy and going, you know, to Stratford-on-Avon and places like that, and tying it all together, and it ties into what they did and what they accomplished over there. It is well worth it. So if there's other family members of the 855 that go over that are eligible, or not eligible, that's not clear, that are available to go, I highly recommend that they do. I thought it was worthwhile.
Well, so now they have 2 years to plan. And like I said, the movie will be an inspiration. So hopefully we'll have a big group. Like I said, I plan to, God willing, I'll be back in 2025. So, but Roger, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight and for sharing your family story. I'm very grateful.
Well, thank you for having me. Looking forward to the movie and the musical.
All right.
To my audience, thank you for listening to Nexus 818 Podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you have questions or topics you'd like to discuss, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email the show at nextus818podcast@gmail.com. That's NEXTUS 818podcast@gmail.com. I like to end each show with a favorite reflection. Tonight I share a quote from Tyler Perry. The most important lesson that I learned in growing up is that forgiveness is something that, when you do it, you free yourself to move on. It's not an easy journey to get to a place where you forgive people, but it is such a powerful place because it frees you. See you for our next show on Wednesday, October the 4th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can catch the show on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Google Podcasts, New York City Podcast Network, and Spotify for Podcasters.